very well. It's a real pleasure and honor to be able to get to speak with you. You know, it's, you know, when you watch a film like Lean On Me back in the 80s, you can't, you think, okay, the kid's there, you don't remember what's going on and stuff, but we've got quite a lot to sort of cover and stuff, and this is Must Be the Music. It's how you got to where you are, because not all of us have the opportunity. So what was the special spark and that really got you to where you are and stuff? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, man, let's talk about it. You just let me know when you're ready to go. I'm ready to go. Let's do it.
Definitely. Now, because we have an international audience, I believe you're on the East Coast. Where exactly are you from and stuff?
Well, I'm over here now, man, in Jersey. I'm born and raised in Paterson, New Jersey. Okay. I'm still Jersey bound, though. I can't really leave Jersey, man. I love it right now.
Okay. I think geography-wise, it's close to New York, I believe.
Yeah, I'm like 3-4 minutes away from New York City.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So how did you start off? Because as I said, you know, I guess we watch the documentaries and we see everyone from the Temptations and stuff starting off somewhere. But how did it happen for you? What did you start singing music lessons and stuff? Or what did you start? How did it start?
Well, I started, you know what, man, I'm going to be honest with you, man. I really didn't know that I was going to move into the singing direction. I was more of a musician. I was a drummer.
Oh.
So I used to play the drums for the church choir and I used to watch my mother sing.
Okay.
And I was mesmerized by what she can do with her vocals, and you know what I mean? Me and my sisters started picking it up around the house, you know, just watching my mom sing at church, and we'll come home and try to do what my moms do. So I first got my bug watching my mother sing.
Wow.
Then my mom started, you know, introducing us to like different music in the house, like Temptations, Gladys Knights and the Pips, Chicago. Like she had a broad range of music, and we took it all in. And I don't know, man, one day we were in choir rehearsal.
Oh, by this time you started going to choir, so not just drumming, or were you still drumming?
Right, this is a rehearsal in choir.
Okay.
Rehearsal. My mother was like, Mike, come here. So she goes, I want you to sing this song. So I'm like, you know what I mean? So she goes, you have such a beautiful voice, I want you to sing the song. I'm like, all right, I'll try.
Okay, well, so hold on. In front of everyone, there was no fear, no nerves?
Listen, I used to stutter real bad. I had a stuttering problem.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So I was always a shy guy.
Yeah.
So for her to pull me up to make me sing in front of everybody, I was mad at her for a couple of days. You know, I was hurt. I was hurt because my mom was like my best friend. Yeah. And she knew I was shy. But after I broke through that, me and my sister started singing, and that's pretty much how I got my start. But when I got into high school is how my group Riff formed.
Okay. Now, before we get there, now, full-time I'm a mental health therapist, and I work with under 18s, and when they have struggles with anxiety, the way we treat them is by exposing them to things that got them nervous. So you said you're a shy person, and your mom put you on the spot. That's what we call flooding when it comes to exposure work. It's like just throwing you in a deep end and like you can swim. So that's now, apart from overcoming the nerve, that's the amazing part. I mean, how old were you? That's one. And two, did you sing well?
Well, I mean, yeah. Like my moms knew that I had a nice voice. And I was very nervous. I was very, very, very nervous, man. But it came out right in the rehearsal. You know, she was teaching it to me line by line. You know what I mean? And I pretty much sang it the way she showed me to sing it. And it came off really, really well. You know, the church, when they finally did the song in church, I blew them away. So it was more like, okay,
Okay.
Mike has a voice. He has a little voice. And,
what did that do for your confidence? What did that do for that shyness that you had? Yeah.
I mean, it definitely taught me that if I just try, you know what I mean? Like, at first you don't succeed, try again. And I learned, you know, to get through that and try it. I tried it. It came out really well. I was very surprised. But it wouldn't have been something that I wanted to do at first, because I was a drummer. Like I said, yeah. I was comfortable in the back, you know, drum. I was comfortable. But my mom was like, bring it. And she made me sing this song. So now, that's how I got it.
Was it because she didn't want you to continue with the drums, or was it because she thought this would be the best way to overcome your nerves? What do you think, looking back, as to why she didn't want you to continue with the drums and focus on her singing?
Well, she knew that I was going to continue the drums, because she had bought me all these drums.
Yeah.
So I better have kept that drum stuff up.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I better have kept that drum stuff up. But she wanted to introduce me. I looked at it as I went on. She was introducing me to she wanted me to get over some of the things that I have. She wanted me to become more braver, to try different things, to come out of my shell, because I did stutter a lot, man. I was very shy, but she knew I had a voice. She knew I was talented.
Yeah.
Just was doing what a mother do, try to push them and see where they go from there. So
yeah,
I thank her for that, because I don't really think, like, had she not have done that, I probably wouldn't have been singing. I probably would have been a musician.
Yeah.
Just playing drums.
But then how were you when you were in school and when you were with your friends? Were you still the shy introvert, or was that, when did that personality sort of, did it change, or were you only vocal at home and then when you're out in public, you would withdraw?
Well, I gotta tell you, man, in the 80s, it was so much music going on, man. It was, you know, Michael Jackson, you know, Lionel Richie.
Oh, yeah.
It was like so much going on in the music industry at the time. So Prince, it was so much. And here in Jersey, you know, like, we had this TV show, MTV. And they play all of the videos, man. And back in the 80s, it was so much talent.
Yeah.
So much talent, man. I can go down the list. It's just so much, you know, from the Van Gogh.
Yeah, Stevie. Yeah.
It was just so much talent in the 80s.
Yeah.
Boy George, everybody, George Michael.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it was so much talent. You know what I mean? And it was women artists, and it was men artists, it was bands, it was rock bands, everything's going on. So I started watching that stuff, you know what I mean? Like, just staying in the TV, like, just watching them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have my friends, we used to get together, you know what I mean? We'd be singing New Edition and, you know what I mean? New Kids on the Block, the Force MDs, we singing all their records. So I knew that I, you know, that I could sing before I went to high school. I knew I had a voice, you know what I mean? I was already seasoned. Mm. I was singing in a little band back in the day with Fetty Wap's mother, his father, and a couple of other musicians. We all sang in the band together, right?
Yeah.
So I knew that I had the talent. So when I got up to high school, how they found out that I could sing, it was more of a test. It was, I came to school one morning, and, you know, this is when I first got into high school.
Yeah.
You know, Joe Clark, the principal at that time, had just did something that was crazy the year before. He had threw out 200 students. He threw them out of the building, because the fact is, they wasn't keeping up with their, you know, their lessons. They were being bad at the school, causing havoc. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when he got there, He had them go through the database, find out who was doing what, who was passing the test, who was being focused, who were not being focused.
Wow.
And he held a assembly program and had these students up on stage. And he basically told them, this is the end of the road for you. You know, if you're not coming here to learn, I have to let you go into the wild. Wow. And it was like, find another school to go to. Kicked them out. Boom. Started chaining the doors and everything. Caused mayhem in Jersey. They locked him up for this. They locked Joe Park up for this. Yeah. So when we got there, meaning me, my first year in high school, and I got there, he held another assembly of us coming in. He was like, listen, I just threw out 200 students, and I'll do it again. I'll go to jail every day. It doesn't matter. I'll go to jail. But you will not come inside this building and not learn and, like, cause havoc and cause other children not to get their education. It's not going to happen.
Wow.
So Warner Brothers and everybody heard about this guy.
Oh.
You understand what I'm saying? And started reaching out. They wrote a story on him and stuff like that. And one day, man, I'm sitting in homeroom. This is my freshman year. I'm sitting in homeroom, and I hear Michael Best come to the office. This is over the loudspeaker. So I'm sitting there like, okay. Now, mind you, Mr. Clark demanded coming into the school that you learn the school song. If you did not know the school song, he would suspend you.
Wow.
For how many days he want. However many days he felt like giving you. He just would suspend you, throw you out until you learned it, come back, sing it for him, and then he'll let you back in the building. But he demanded that you learn the school song. So he called me to the office. Michael Best, come to the office. I come down to the office, man, and there was two girls inside his office with him waiting for me. So I go in, and he goes, Mr. Best, he said, I had a question for you. He goes, which one of these girls are you dating? I'm like, none of them, sir. He goes, Mr. Best, he said, somehow, I just don't believe you, man. I'm sorry. I just don't believe it. He goes, just for that, he said, I'm going to sing the school song, man. I begged him. I said, Mr. Clark, I said, please, sir, please. I said, if you let me come back tomorrow and sing the same song, I'm going to blow you away. Right? Now, mind you, I just want to let you know this. You are getting this raw and uncut right now, brother.
Okay.
I didn't know the school song. Okay? I hadn't learned it yet. You know what I mean? So I was, listen, I was going to get suspended that day. I know it. But somehow or another, it was secretary day. And he said, okay. He said, listen. He said, because it's secretary day, I'm going to give you a pass, Mr. Playboy. He said, I want you to come back tomorrow and sing the school song. He said, if you do not know this school song, and if you do not blow me away, I'm going to suspend you for 21 days, which means that you will have to repeat the school year over.
Wow.
Again. Which means I was in the ninth grade. I would have to do the ninth grade again.
Wow.
The following year. So I got up with my brothers, Anthony and Dwayne, who I knew could sing. We hadn't had a group though. We were just singing in church. We sang in church. I got up with Anthony and Dwayne Jones, and we put a rendition of the school song together that you know it today to be in that movie.
Okay.
We came back the next day, and Mr. Clark was like, okay. It was like, ladies and gentlemen, rise for the singing of the school song. Now, this is over the loudspeaker inside his office. The whole school has to stand up.
Wow.
My man, when we did it a doo-wop way, as you know it.
Yeah. Today.
We did it three-part harmony. And Mr. Clark was standing there looking at us like as we struck it up. We singing it, right? We changed it from the way it used to go. We changed it. We totally flipped it. And he was standing there like, and I'll tell you, man, when first of all, he introduced us like this. He said, ladies and gentlemen, the Playboy. So then we went into it. And said, after we finished, he stood back like this. And all you can hear was a big roar. Like, I'm telling you, it was like a tidal wave of applause, like coming from the school. It was like, ah, you just heard the screaming, the yelling. I'm going to tell you right now, brother, we had to sing that school song every day for a year. Every day we had to come in his office and sing the school song.
The three of you.
He wanted the school to learn it the way we sang it.
Wow.
So, as you well know, I was very popular at that time, you know what I mean? I got popular, you know what I mean? Like, my group, we formed, the name of the group was Riff. You know, Mr. Clark called us to his office shortly after that and was like, listen, man, they're doing a movie about me. He said, I would like y'all to be in the movie. He said, I want y'all to sing the school song the way y'all sing the school song. He said, and we're going to tell y'all story a little bit in the movie. And that's how we got our break, man. The music director, the writer, and the executive producer formed a production company called Fair Shot Production, signed us to it, and shopped us a record deal.
Wow.
So we had a record deal before the movie actually hit, and we actually went to LA before the movie came out to do our first album with SBK Records, man. And that's how we got our start, man.
Okay. I mean, there's a few things I wanted to find out. Were you dating any of those two girls?
Listen to this now. I liked one of them, and one of the other girls liked me, right? True story. One of the girls ended up being my baby's mama. Like, we actually hooked up. I had a kid with her, man. Okay. You know what I mean? We're not, you know, because we were young.
Yeah.
At the time, we didn't know. You know, I was in high school. I was a virgin, man, back then, man. You know what I mean? I was a virgin. But we ended up hooking up. We ended up having a beautiful son. And listen, I thank them for doing what they did, because had they not did it, Riff would never have got this movie. The school song wouldn't have came about.
None of
that would have happened. I thank her today, man. I call her up, be like, listen, I thank you. Because of what y'all did, y'all changed my life. Man.
Yeah. So, but then what happened? I mean, you you added three of you that sang. How did the other two join? Because...
All right, so... Yeah. That's an excellent question. Well, check this out. That didn't take long at all. The first time we sang it, right, like my cousin Steven, he's like my best friend. He was he's a baritone singer. And we had a friend, Kenny, that we knew he could sing.
Yeah.
Listen, after that first week of us singing it, we put Kenny and Buzz into the group. It was like this. Come on. And we put them in, and Steven added the bass, and Kenny added that, praise thy name to ever. He just added a whole nother thing to it.
Okay.
And it made it to what the alma mater is today, man. It was awesome. Awesome shot.
So there was five of you before the label came around?
Yes, definitely. Yes.
Okay.
Five of us a week after... We sang it for Mr. Clark. It was fabulous.
Okay.
Singing the song.
Okay. And did when you went home that night, because I'm very detailed saying this, did your mom know that you need to learn the song? Did she help out with that?
No. I went straight to Anthony and Dwayne's house.
Okay.
See, at that time, I was in high school, right? So my mom kind of like, listen, you got to grow up. You got to, you know, you gotta be a man. You got to go inside here. Got to stay focused. You got to do what you got to do. So she let us go.
Yeah.
Unless I was in some trouble, and I was never a problem child.
Okay.
It was more like, go do your thing. If you need me, let me know. My mom worked hard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She was always out there working. So Nah, man, I didn't even make it home.
Okay.
That day, I went straight, after he told me that I was going to get suspended.
Yeah.
And repeat the grade over.
Yeah.
Me and Anthony Dwayne rehearsed for like a good, like I got there about, we got out of school about 4. I was there to about 10.
Okay. But why did you decide to change the version? Why not just sing the version as it was?
Because the version that was there was more like a choir style, was more like, you know, it was more like concert choir. Like, I wish I could remember it, man. I'm telling you, I didn't know it. But like, it was like a concert choir style, you know, like, you know, it sounded like a school song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when we got to it, we decided to put that gospel feel to it and doo-wop, and it came together, man. It was incredible. It was
and there was no fear that you could, he might not like it and he might just suspend you anyway. Did you think of that?
You know what? We didn't think of it at the time. We were scared. I was scared out of my pants because, see, Anthony Dwayne didn't have nothing to worry about.
Yeah, he hadn't pulled him up, yeah.
So it was just me trying to impress him.
Okay.
I didn't know that I was going to impress him that much. I think what really got him was after we were done on how the school reacted to it.
Okay.
It was more like the school went bananas.
Okay.
And he was like, this is the kind of, what did he call it at the time? School spirit.
Okay.
That I need.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because he was all about education and stuff, but
yeah.
Now we had a version of the school song that everybody loved. And he knew it because he made it a stickler. You better know this. So it was more like we changed it up now. He's like, listen, I want everybody to know it the way they sing it. Sing it exactly the way they sing it.
Is the school still singing the song now? Or?
Exactly the way we sing it, man.
Wow. My goodness.
It's funny because we went back to shoot a music video in the school 30 years later. Okay,
yeah.
So it was like a year, couple years, like a year and a half ago.
Yeah,
we went to the school. We went in the office, and there's a big picture of us in the school, like a big picture, like I'm talking about a humongous picture of us in the main office. Joe Clark, been retired.
Yeah,
we're still ringing off in Eastside High School right now.
My goodness.
We're still ringing
off. Wow, that's amazing.
It's funny too, because their school uniforms, they actually have our picture on their uniforms. They actually have a picture of the scene that we did in the bathroom on their uniforms. It's crazy.
Wow. Yeah. Good. I mean a lot of schools always get, you know, high schools, colleges, they always want to be proud of people who pass through, and that sense of, you know, if they can do it, you can do it. And I think that's an amazing legacy to have. The question I had is, because you mentioned that you guys got signed up. Did you guys have lawyers? Did your parents have to see the contracts, or was it just like
man, I love the way you ask these questions. You know what, man? I'm gonna keep it 100,000 degrees with you right now, please. All right, this is real.
Okay.
Our parents, like, we're from the hood. I don't know if you know what the hood is. Like, the hood is like, ain't nothing good going on in the hood but cookouts. You know, you see a lot of drug activity being, you know, going on in there, man. We from the hood. So you have to understand, when that was happening, we was making, first of all, I was homeless. I actually was living with my cousin Steven, because for somehow or another, like, we lost the house that we had. Like, we lost the house. So the whole entire family, because we had a 3-family home, like first floor, second floor, third floor, basement. My uncle stayed in the basement. We lost that house for some reason. I don't know why. Until this day, I don't know how.
Okay.
But everybody from that house moved inside my cousin Steven's house, my Aunt Della. We moved in with them. So the whole entire family was living in this big house. Now, you got to understand, my Aunt Della, they were always, you know, they always had, you know, I want to say the uppities, man. They was a part of the uppities, man. They house, they had 3-car garages.
Oh, wow.
Like it was beautiful.
Yeah.
So we was living with them. When Lean On Me came about, we was making so much money.
Wow.
I was able to move my family out and put my immediate family, which is myself, my 2 sisters and my mother, into another home. Like we had, I was able to put them in a house.
Wow.
So we was making a lot of money. Then when the record deal came, that went well, man, because we were able to record the record and go on tour. So we was making money, man. My parents, she didn't have no worries. She didn't care about it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, you young. What you gonna do?
Yeah, but
give me some of the money when you come back. But that's how it is.
Yeah, but you know, I lived in the States briefly, and I remember, you know, from TLC to even New Edition, everyone talking about contracts and production deals and not knowing the stuff and not understanding publishing and stuff. So you guys in high school and they sign you onto a production deal. And I'm wondering, did they say you need legal advice and let's make sure you understand what's going on? Oh, so you guys didn't just sign to like a
No, we didn't have a fair contract. Like we could have made so much more money if it was fair.
Yeah.
But it was like a shot for the guys in the hood. You know what I mean? It was more like, yo, this is your shot. Go in, do what you gotta do, and then renegotiate and make the contract a little bit better.
Okay.
So we were smart enough to know, or you know, my manager at the time, Skip, was smart enough to know to let us know that, listen, it's 1 in a million that this is gonna happen. You got a shot to be in this movie that's gonna go number one. And now you're getting a record deal. He said, let's get it done and we'll go back in and we'll renegotiate. Yes, it was not a fair contract at all. It was a okay contract.
Yeah.
It wasn't a 360 deal. It wasn't something where we wasn't gonna make no money, but the money that we could have made, we wasn't gonna get that.
Now, I'm hearing you mention you had a manager, Skip, and I'm still thinking you guys in high school, and you get where did the manager pop up from?
Oh man, listen. First of all, how did you pronounce your name?
Namdi.
Namdi, listen to me, man. You are all right with me, bro. I love this. Listen to me, man. Skip, okay, when we did the school song for the first time, he found us. Because he was a social worker at the school.
Okay.
Now, check this out. True story. His son, Darnell Van Rensselaer, is the lead singer of Shy.
Oh, okay.
Check it out. Listen. True story. Shy used to rehearse right after we rehearse inside his house. You understand what I'm saying? So Skip came down after Riff sang and was like, listen, I have some songs. I want you guys to just come by after school, take a listen to them. He said, I think it will help you all along the way. So we came in and we met Skip, and Skip played us these records, man. And, you know, well, he actually played them on the piano and sang them, and he gave us parts and stuff. We fell in love with Skip. You know what I mean? This is our freshman year. We fell in love with him. So we end up making him our manager.
Okay.
So I just wanted to throw in that Shy situation because Darnell Van Rensselaer was a student in Eastside at the time.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
When he graduated, he went to Howard University.
Howard, yeah.
And that's where Shy was completely formed. But for the most part, him and Garfield been rocking up at the house when we was young.
Okay.
We all young, we hanging together and stuff like that. Yeah. They had their own group, we had our own group.
Okay. So, oh, it's good that you guys had someone that you could sort of, because as I said, it's, you know, you just don't trust anybody who just puts something in front of you. At least he could read it, he could say, yeah, it's not great, but it's better than nothing, and guide you along and stuff. And so,
Chip was like a father of us, man. He protected us a lot. Like, even when we were on tour, it was no, like, you know, we did our thing on tour, but it was more so where, like, he protected us, man. It was more like, listen. Sing, go straight to the room.
Wow.
You know what I mean? It wasn't no fooling around like that, man. He was on us, trying to make sure we stayed focused and did everything the right way. Taught us how to be gentlemen.
Yeah.
It was an awesome thing, man. He's an awesome guy, man. We were lucky to have him.
Yeah.
People would have taken advantage of us so bad, man.
Yeah. So when you guys, okay, you've done the movie, you've got your little deal. As a fivesome, did you think long term? What were you thinking? What was the sense of where we're going to go? How we're going to make a move?
You know what, man? I'm going to be honest with you. We didn't know. We was kids. We was having fun. We on the road opening for, like, we never did a club date.
Okay.
You know what I mean? The record company threw us on tour with Vanilla Ice when he came out on the Ice Baby tour.
You kidding
me? He was selling out. You know how he was selling out football fields.
Yeah. He was the biggest person in the world.
You understand all that? So Riff was opening for that, listening to these, to the crowd screaming. It was too much for us to handle, man. You know what I mean? It was crazy. So, you know what, man? We were just living the dream, man. We was just trying to stay focused, live the dream. We wasn't like thinking that we were even gonna go on and do another album. We was concentrating on that first album.
Okay.
You know what I mean? We're just having fun, man.
So at the time, so this was about, was this about 89 or 90? What year was this when you guys were doing the tours?
91.
Okay, 91. So
91.
Now, in my head, I'm thinking nowadays they have chaperones to go around and start to make sure you keep up with your education.
Oh, yeah. No, we had graduated.
Okay.
You gotta understand, when we got into... when we was approached by doing the movie, that was our freshman year. So he talked about doing the movie our freshman year because he had already thrown out the people a year before we came. So Warner Brothers was already on him.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So it was more like, when is the movie going to start? So it happened when we got in 10th grade. You know what I mean? The movie started being recorded. We were still required to go to school, blah, 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 blah. It was still the same. We had just recorded the movie when we was in the 10th grade. We was flying out to L.A. We did some parts out there. It was a trip. So by the time we finished, it took about a year to do that. Then we went to the 11th grade.
Okay.
So right around 1990, like we had got our first TV show. It was like 89. We got our first TV show with Regis and Kathy Lee. We did their show. That was our first TV run. And then, boom, the movie dropped. And then we dropped the album shortly after that, 1991. The movie had dropped earlier, like, I think it was 87, 88.
89, about 89, yeah.
Yeah. So then, shortly after that, that's when we dropped the CD, man, and we just rode that wave that whole year. That 1991 was a good year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of big bands, and then, you know, I'm thinking about, did you guys do any writing, or were you, did they write all the songs for you, you just sang, or what was the deal back?
Yeah, Skip Van Rensselaer wrote some songs. We helped do some of the arrangement on his songs.
You know, okay.
We did our little harmony parts. But Skip Emerson, our manager, he got 4 songs on the first album. The second album that we did, Riff wrote 4 songs on that album.
Okay. And I'm wondering, when you did the first album, you were just so happy to do it. You didn't think of, well, publishing and we need to get our names and stuff.
Listen, no, man, that's what cost us our deal. Like that is why the deal, like, we actually got blackballed from the game. And I'll explain to you exactly how that went down. During the second album, okay, they gave us a budget to go in to do our second album. It's time to do the second album. They wanted to know who we wanted to work with. So immediately, you know, we're talking Teddy Riley. We're talking all these other cats. We're trying to, because we did a predominantly pop album, the first album.
You know, I was going to say that. It was like the My Heart Falls. I was listening to it, and I think this is stuff like, more, you know, it was, you know, the electric, the guitar and everything. It was like great sound.
We had horns on the record.
Yeah.
It was a pop album. The first album was a pop album.
Yeah.
Now, we had great success with that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We had a couple of top tens. You know what I mean? We just had a great run with that record. We ended up doing certified gold through the record company. They helped push to make it go, like they bought up some of the copies, but regardless, we got that thing, right?
Yeah.
So man, I wanna tell you that during the second album they gave us a budget and was like, okay, because at that time we came out with Jodeci and Boyz II Men.
Yeah.
So after the Vanilla Ice tour, we went on tour with LL Cool J. Oh, Mama said Knock You Out tour.
Wow.
We did that tour for like 6 months. So after that, we started doing the club dates with Boyz II Men and Jodeci and High Five and
okay.
Ex-Girlfriend and Color Me Bad. We doing all these club dates, and we're being introduced to other groups. Because you have to understand, we weren't seeing black groups on the Vanilla Ice tour. We ran into Boyz II Men like at the summer jams and stuff like that there.
Yeah.
But we never really did club dates with them until the end of 91. We started doing club dates with them. And Jodeci and all the other groups I told you about. So when it was time to do our next album, we wanted to come a little harder. We're writing, you know, ghetto songs, like where we come from, like you don't have to leave. We talking about doing it to the girl and licking on them, and we trying to come R&B.
Yeah.
So the record company knew what they didn't push it at all. They gave us 2 songs off the song, the album. They put it out, and then they wanted to meet with us, have us go in, do another album. So they called us to a meeting. Was like, look, guys, this album isn't doing it, okay? We want to take y'all to number one. Y'all deserve it. You know what I mean?
Company call you into the office?
Calls in the office. They set us down. They said, listen, guys, it's time to do the third album. No, it's time to do the next album. This album here is not what we have planned for you guys. We let you guys do it, you know, get some writing. You got your publishing off. It was like, look, we want to take you to number one.
Okay, now this story is too good to not understand what your thoughts were when you were pushing the second album. And because I know you got Teddy on, Brenda's Got a Baby, Judy's.
Yeah.
So you've got all that stuff happening, and I'm sure you could see it not moving as your first one did. What were you guys thinking in the midst of, wow, it's not moving, what's going on?
Listen, we was looking at them like, what? You want to do another album? There's some more songs on this album that you can push, man. You know what I mean? Because at that time, remakes was heavy at the time. So
yeah,
we did a hot remake of the Isley Brothers, Voyage to Atlantis. We like, listen, throw out Voyage to Atlantis. They like, nah, we don't think that we want to do anything on this particular album. So they said, listen, this is what we're going to do. We want y'all to go into the studio with the number one producer that we know. His name is David Foster.
Oh, goodness. Okay. I know David. Yeah, well, so,
they said they want us to go in and work with David Foster. They wanted David Foster to do the whole album. All right. So now they sent us over to a studio session with David Foster to see if he liked working with Riff. So he went into the studio. We met David Foster and we cut a song with David Foster. Right.
Yeah.
We left the studio. And the song was, let me tell you, the song was phenomenal, man. I'm telling you right now, David Foster is who they say he is.
Yeah, like, he didn't break my heart for Toni Braxton, yeah.
Listen, he is the best.
Yeah, he is, yeah, yeah.
Celine Dion, yeah. At that time, man, we wanted to be Jodeci, man. We wanted to be hard. Listen, some of us wanted to be Jodeci. We wanted to be hard. Hats wanted to switch the hats to the back, drop the pants, and be Jodeci.
Oh, goodness.
Okay. This is some of the guys that's in the group. Now, I want to let you know it wasn't me, though. Like, I saw the writing on the wall, man. I'm like, yo, nah. I see what's going on. This is, you know, I see what's going on. They basically made us an offer. We went in, did the song with my man Foster.
David, yeah.
And they had already written that second album off. They like, listen, if you want to be here, they basically said to us, listen, we want you to go home and think about it. Go home, think about it. Let us know what y'all want to do. We're going to give y'all $1 million, you know, that y'all can bust up among yourself. And you're going to do the new album. And man, let me tell you something. I'm gonna call it out like it is, man. Dwayne Jones, okay. My man Kenny Kelly, okay. And my man Stephen Capers. This is 3/5 of the group. Wasn't trying to hear it. They was like, nah, man. Mm-mm. So me and Anthony got voted out because me and Anthony wanted to go do that album. We wanted to go do the record. We wanted to get back out there on tour. We wanted that number one record.
What about Skip? What's he saying? What's your manager saying?
Skip at the time was with a, he had gave up a piece of his management company, well, his management points, and joined forces with another lady. And they were partners. We never liked her.
Okay.
Because we thought she was all about the money, and you know what I mean? Her name was Margot Lewis. I'll put it out there. she you know, we just never liked Margot. And we was having some bad blood with Skip because he was with Margot and we felt like he wasn't with us. Margot wanted us to do the album because she was looking at all the money.
The money.
You seen it, man. It was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
We getting ready to blow. You seen it because EMI SBK was setting us up to win. Like they really had it. They was giving us David Foster to do the whole album. Like,
I mean, you had Boyz II Men, the clean cut sort of image, and they were selling millions more than
they were selling millions. But we wanted to be Jodeci. Like some of us wanted to be Jodeci, and they wanted to be hard. And the hood. That's what they wanted to be. So we came, I swear to you, this is how it went. We came back. They had switched the office. This is no lie, man. We came in to meet, not even with the people that we know. It was the person that was taking over the label. He was now the vice president of the label of EMI.
Oh yeah.
And it was, I swear, we came in, it was like the Illuminati, man, that I know today. It was more like he sat all the way across the room. I never seen an office this big, I swear to you. It was like it was like a mansion. And we walked in and we were sitting, they had the seats lined up for us. It was 6 seats. It was Riff and the manager, Skip. And we sitting there, he's all the way across the room. Wow. It was like, you're there and we're all the way. I'm talking about all the way.
Wow.
Back here, like, like this. And man, he told us, he said, listen, straight up, he said, listen, if you do this record, I promise you, we're gonna make y'all number one. He said, if you don't, he said, then we're gonna let y'all go. So already, the brothers, you know, we were already outvoted because we thinking, you know, we got a little money in our pocket, we can go and get another deal. And Skip told us that day, he said, listen, I promise you, it's not gonna be that easy for y'all to get another deal. Because that people are not gonna wanna touch you. And it's true. He saw that then. Man, we left SBK, man. We went to Sylvia Rome's. We went to the different record companies, man, and cats was like, yo, why did y'all leave SBK? I don't understand why. Why did y'all had a career there? Like, what are you doing here? Like, you can't get your deal back? You need to go. The CEOs wasn't trying to touch us, man. Nobody. Tommy Silverman, nobody wanted to touch Riff, man. They were like, no. He said, you guys are so talented. Y'all had it made there. What's wrong with you guys? And we ended up losing it, man, being blackballed. And so that's the Riff story. I can't wait to write the book, to do the film. Is coming. We're going to sit down. We're going to figure it out. It's going to happen.
But then how did that affect you guys as a you know, five friends and, you know, family that you've grown up with? I mean, the
how did it affect us?
Yeah, as relationship wise.
You are the man. I love these questions. We were frustrated, man. You know what I mean? We were frustrated, man. Like, now we couldn't get a deal. You know what I mean? Cats, you know, we basically broke up. We couldn't do no shows because we were spoiled. We was out there
with Vanilla Ice. I mean, you're doing
those, just... man. Like, we done caught the bug. Somebody talking about come down the block and sing. We weren't trying to hear. We're like, what are you talking about? We riff, baby. We ain't down the block, baby. What's happening? But anyway, we lost our way and we ended up taking a break. You know, we just decided to take a break and we ended up splitting up like for a while. We took a break. My man Kenny started his own group called Mind Frame. It was a spoken words group. You know, he sang the vocals and spoken words and rap. And it was brilliant, man. Had they got a deal, they would have blew. It was amazing what they were doing. My cousin Steven started singing in a cover band. You know what I mean? He was making, you know, the 80s, he started making money. Then we got a call, like Anthony got a call from Spanky from the group Men of Vision.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
they had lost three members of their group. Mm. And Spanky and Anthony met up in church or something, and Anthony gave Spanky his number to do some songs for Riff. And what happened was, Spanky didn't call him right away. So, you know, but he did tell us about it. He was like, listen, man, Spanky, that singer in the Vision, gonna do some songs for us. Spanky was a producer, writer, whatever. It's funny, because I had went to a show, an R. Kelly concert, and Men of Vision had opened up, and I finally got to see who Men of Vision was. I didn't know who they were at the time, but anyway, to make a long story short, Spanky called Chill and was like, listen, I need you and Michael to come join Men of Vision. He said, because I'm going to lose my deal. He said, you guys sing great. And Anthony was like, I'll come, but I got to bring my brother Styles, Dwayne Jones. I got to bring him too. He was like, we only want two more because it's four quarters to a dollar. You know what I mean? We're trying to, you know, do it right. It's only four quarters. It'll be, you know, four of us. We'll make more of the money.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, you got to hear us together. He said, if you can turn it down after you hear it, then it'll be what it'll be. So Wayne came, we met at Junior's Cheesecake in Brooklyn. Junior's Cheesecake Factory. We met at Junior's in Brooklyn. We sat down, we ate, we talked, we ate some food. we sang a song together and it locked like nobody's business. We locked. It was like, okay, look, we're going up to Sony on tomorrow and we're gonna sing for Ty Mottola, Corey Rooney, Michael Jackson,
Mike,
Eddie Rally. We're gonna sing for all these cats tomorrow. We gotta rip them down, because if not, we're gonna lose our deal. So we went up there the next day, and sure enough, man, all these cats was there.
Any nerves?
Huh?
Any? Was it as nervous as singing in church the first time, seeing MJ and Tommy?
Listen, Ty Mottola, Corey Rooney, Teddy Riley was on the phone, Michael Jackson, it was Jerry Greenberg, Ken Komisar. But everybody was excited about Men of the Vision, but they didn't know what was getting ready to happen. So when we got there, see, the first group couldn't sing as good as we could, you know what I mean? So it was more like when we got there, they knew that they have a masterpiece. And when we sang, it was like, oh man, let's go, let's do the deal, let's get in, let's get this record done. At this time, Blackstreet was blowing up like crazy. Blackstreet was out of here. Teddy had an altercation with some of the cats that was in his group, was in the first Men of Vision, you know what I mean? He wasn't sure if he was going to rock with us at first. It was more like, but it wasn't our fault. It was what the other kids had did. But because of Teddy, we ended up signing the deal with Teddy, and because it was his deal, it was Teddy's deal with Sony, with Michael Jackson. Okay. And we signed to Teddy. And Teddy basically allowed us to do another record.
Okay. So you guys did a record with him. You did about two tracks with him. So he must have known how you guys work and stuff. So
Teddy knew what he was getting, and that's the only reason why the deal was saved, because he knew that we were, we was riff. It was a nice guys. When we hooked up with Teddy, when we was working with him, it was more like it was a pleasant thing. It was all love. Yeah. He caught a check from EMI for bazillions of records. bazillions of dollars. He was okay. You know what I mean? It was more like, listen, let's go. And I thank him for that. Listen, if you hear this interview, man, I never got a chance to thank him for that, because at that time, man, my mind was messed up. And because of him, we were able to keep things going, man.
Yeah.
I thank Teddy for that, man.
No, I think
Michael.
Yeah. Huh? No, the question I had was because as a five piece, did you guys fall out with each other? I mean, after you had three of you who said, "Now we want to be hard," and you are thinking we need to take a deal, and then you're blacklisted. Did you guys? I won't say hate, but did you just like all our failures now your fault? Yeah. And did they admit to say, yeah, man, we messed up, or did you guys have that conversation?
Yeah, we had the conversation, and there was some saltiness about it. There was saltiness. See, the thing is, it was saltiness when we couldn't get another situation.
Yeah.
And we started pointing fingers at these guys. We like, see, we told y'all we should have did, we was in a good place, we was making money. Yeah, it was a lot of pointing fingers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, when cats started pulling off, doing their own thing, me and Anthony and Dwayne, we had to figure out what we was gonna do. So when we got that call, it was like, boom! We went and got the deal. These cats looked up and saw us signed to Sony, signed to Michael Jackson. We got a new video out. Do you feel me? Cass was pissed off about that. Kenny was pissed off about it for a long time, because we didn't sit down and tell him that we were doing another group. You know what I mean? But at that time, we weren't speaking at that time like that. Yeah, everybody was playing their own thing. So he saw it when everybody else saw it. When you looked on BET and we was out there rocking, he saw it. You know what I mean? So that ended up going crazy for years, man. And then we ended up finally, true story, man. After Men of Vision, you know, we toured across seas out there in London and stuff like that. There we came back. Men of Vision took a break. You know, Spanky started writing gospel music. He got back into the gospel field. You know, he was our lead singer. Yeah. He ended up doing gospel. So we try to figure out a way. We're like, all right, let's take the break. So after that, man, you know, we vowed to like always try to get Riff back together, you know, try to see where we could go, do some music, whatever. And we used to ask Kenny every year, man, like for years, he wouldn't try to touch Riff. It was 1 year, I want to say it was like four years ago. We had caught a check. A check came for us, some publishing from EMI. We had got a big check, and I called him. I was like, yo, we got this money, man. We want to split it up, make sure you get your half. He was happy. he was going crazy. It was over $100,000. It was a little check. And we had to split it up. So he was happy. I said, okay, man, we gotta come back and do a Riff reunion album. And he finally said yes. 2 days after that, he passed away.
Oh God.
Passed away. He didn't get a chance to see the money that was coming. His wife saw it. And we didn't get a chance to do the Riff reunion record.
Wow.
You know what I mean? But we still cut the record. I ended up still cutting, you know, we ended up cutting, we still got a 15 song record that, you know, when the guys is ready to put it out, we can put it out whenever we want, you know what I mean? But it's when everybody get their head right and wanna do it, we're gonna do it. If not, Nitty Green is working on his EP, and I got a new song out called With Me. I'm doing the best I can, man. I'm gonna keep it going until the casket drop.
So I'm gonna get to your solo stuff, but I do wonder, because there's been such a craving for the 90s type of music, and I think it's because the music that we're getting now is very short term, very, you know, just put it out there, get a top hit and move it along, very Instagram quick, see it and move on. And you know, no one's really taking their time talking about love. You know, it's not talking about relationships and stuff. So I do notice that a lot of the old bands, even Gary, getting back and doing a lot of tours, and it's getting packed out. Did you guys start to think, okay, 30 years, I know you did some venues, but did you start thinking, you know, we can be out on the road, you know, if Intro, no, it, well, I was Nexus doing it, and oh, everyone's going on tour. You know, there's a big market for that, but
man, listen, we thought that we can do it. We actually, because Riff had a pop appeal, and we were on tour, we never started the ground root, like we never hit these clubs. We never built our fan base like as strong as we could. You know what I mean? We was more like movie, like, so if we ain't being pushed on the pop side, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
People aren't gonna know exactly who we are until we sing the song. So if you put us on your show, on a 90s show, because we came out in 91.
Yeah.
You put us on the show and we sing the records, it's like, oh, I remember that song. Them dudes can sing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's more of that. But if it's like the promoters not knowing what we bought to the industry, like the movie, we had certified top 10 bangers in 1991.
You
know what I'm saying? So it was like, if the promoters don't know, they somehow will slip through the cracks.
Hmm.
If one promoter says yes, and they get the whiff of what Riff brings to the stage on those 90 stages.
Yeah.
They're gonna go crazy, but then they're gonna have to pay, because straight up and down, they like missed us. They wasn't letting us in. Even doing that, we had to do our own venues.
Okay. You know what I mean?
But we'll definitely do the first run. nice and easy.
Yeah.
So they see what they been missing. Right now, the people are getting the 90s, but they're getting the same shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Every show, it's the same artists on there, man.
Yeah.
People want a variety. There was a lot of artists, and there was a lot of artists in the 90s.
You mentioned about your own stuff, because I noticed you had some singles that you put out on your page. But I just wondered then, because music has changed, you know, back in the days you needed a label. I mean, in some respect, you do need a labels can be good. But the platforms right now, I mean, if you record a hit and put out an iTunes and Spotify or a Tidal, you know, people in the streaming services. So you don't necessarily need a label unless you want them to start promoting and pushing it. How are you working on your own stuff and the direction you're going to try and take?
You know what, man? That's a very good question. And I know how the music industry is today. It's so different right now. Artists aren't really making, I don't think, like, real artists is selling a lot of records, man. Like, it's, like, I heard Beyonce say it one time, people aren't making albums no more. Yeah. They're singling people to death. They're giving people singles and stuff like that, because people don't really appreciate the records. Unless you're a major artist, where like these major companies is buying these records and they're making it already platinum form. Like, Drake is set for the rest of his life. Apple, back to him.
Yeah.
Back to him. He's going platinum, triple platinum every time out the gate. He's got, because they got the deal worked out with him. But people aren't buying records no more, man. They are streaming, they are downloading music for free. People aren't buying it, man. Yeah. It's not happening. You know what I mean? So you have to really love the music. Mm. Artists have to love what they do. Because the only way you're going to make money is rocking them shows. And listen, it's good to be with a label, as long as if it's not a 360 deal, where you're able to make some money, you know what I mean? Because right now, record companies want money off of everything you do. But if you look up and link up with a distribution company, man, that understands what it is, and they ain't trying to get everything off you, you can, you know, it's good to have a machine. If you have a machine that can push your stuff where a lot of people can see it, can get it, you should do that. Yeah, stuff is direct. Like, I can rock a song right now, put it up tomorrow.
Yeah.
How many people are gonna know that is out there? Like,
that's true. Yeah.
So it's like, right now, I really don't have a game plan. It's not bulletproof. I know what I wanna do. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm just getting everything prepared, because there's a few situations that I wanna go and visit and see if I can get exactly what I need to push what I'm trying to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At the same time, I'm building my team. I'm trying to get the right people in place that cares about what Nick Green is about. And we're gonna see, man, we're just gonna see. I'm not gonna let my team down. I'm gonna straight up do what I do every time. I feel like I got a story to tell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm a good actor, so it's just not going to stop with the music. I'm trying to do everything. Acting, singing, I produce, you know what I mean? I'm trying to do some backgrounds. Whatever it takes to rock, I just want to continue to make music. And I'm spending my own bread putting out my own music and seeing where it takes. Because you never know who might hear it and go, I like that dude right there. Something about that dude. I like him.
Yeah.
And they're like, yo, I'm finna put some money into you, man.
Yeah.
Funny, you got a personality. The girls like you. The guys like you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I gotta do what I can, man. And not let anyone stop me.
Yeah.
I have to do what I have to do.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that then. So, is that how Vibe Sessions came about? Then, just really, just trying to just broaden your horizon, your enterprise and stuff.
Yo, I love what you're doing, bro. That's exactly how Vibe Sessions came about, man. I was sitting home, I'm like, okay, let me think. I'm a shy guy, bro.
Okay.
I know you can't tell. I'm a shy guy.
I'll take your word for it.
I am trying to figure out. I was trying to figure out how I can remain and be seen during this pandemic. You know, the COVID. I'm like, yo, we ain't doing no shows. We were on a run. We had a lot of shows lined up. Riff had a lot of shows lined up. I canceled. So I'm like, yo, okay, what can I do? I said, okay, you know what? Let me get in touch with the group and see if we can, you know, during this pandemic, let's create something where people can see us. And I put the Riff signal out in the air, and I told these guys what I wanted to do. I said, we're going to create like a podcast, and we're just going to get up there. We're going to talk. We're going to sing. We're just going to let people, you know, you have a day, you have a day, I have a day. Like, we all have days where we can just do what we want to do. Have the cameras follow us. Nobody wanted to do it. Nobody wanted to do it. Cats like, I ain't got time for that. You know? Yeah. But these cats is like on their own platforms doing and, you know, singing and stuff like that. But they don't want to do nothing to help the group. I said, okay. So I pick up the phone. I call my little brother. You know, he's a real close friend of mine. Yeah, I call him my little brother because we grew up together. And he's a little something, you know what I mean?
So, oh, that's Pi, right?
Real skinny dude, you know what I mean?
Is that Pi?
Pi, yeah.
Okay.
Right? So me and him, we've been rolling tight since we were young. You know, his father, yeah, I love his father's mother. Like, they adopted me into they, like, we break bread together. We took him on tour with us when we was with Men of Vision. You know, okay. That dude was with us. So he knows the history. He knows what's up. So I called him, I said, listen, man, you got a book coming out. Well, you have a book out. Let me interview you on this session thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Something new. I'm trying it. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I end up talking to him. You know, we created Vibe Sessions. I brought him in. We talked and people responded to it. You know, that first night, man, we had about like more than we've ever had. Because everybody wanted to see what you were doing. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Then that's when the haters come in. You know, you got the haters. Because black folk is like, all right, show me. You know what I mean? So show me what you're doing. If I like it, you know what I mean? I'm going to rock with it.
Yeah.
What they do is they'll wait until we go off the air and then they'll watch it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Instead of watching it right there, so we gotta work on them. But Vibe Sessions is just a platform, man, where we talk about life, love, and music, and nothing more. You know what I mean? I open up the show with some music. You may have heard it, you may not have heard the music. I'll touch back. I may play rock, pop. You never know when Nick Green gonna bring on the show. And then we'll either do a conversation show. And now that we hooked up with Elise and Katrina, like they're you know, they're getting us people to interview the show, and it's coming together, man. We have some good people working with us. So we're hoping that Vibe Sessions would do great for us, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It has given me, like, how this has worked out, it's giving me confidence to speak. I would never be able to talk to you, man, if I didn't do Vibe Sessions. Wow. God.
Yeah.
I'm more of the shy type, laid back, chilling. But when I hit the stage and sing, I'm a whole
A different person, yeah.
I'm a wild, crazy guy, because I studied Bobby Brown, and Prince and Michael Jackson. That stuff comes out of you.
Yeah.
So that's all I know, you know? So it's like, but as far as the speaking, because I was always shy, I would never do it. I would let somebody else do it. I sit back in the back, like,
yeah. I saw the one you did with Talor, and I guess having the contacts is really helpful as well, because even the one you had with Timmy as well, because I've seen about six or seven of his interviews, and they're all different, and he feeds off people differently. So, you know, so it's good that what you're doing, because what it does keep you in a public eye, and and people start saying, oh yeah, okay, I remember that. Okay, you know, it's because it's quite easy to forget. It's quite easy to forget, not just the group, but just think, you know, after a while, easy to forget. If, you know, if Damien had and stuff hadn't been doing the guy tours, people could just easily forget. So, you know, what you're doing is remarkable. And I guess it's, you know, it's important that, you know, even if the guys aren't on board right now, I know this COVID hit a lot of people heavy. As I said, I'm a therapist, so this is busy season for me, because we all responded differently. I started this as a way of escaping COVID, because I was just like, this is getting too crazy, I need to do stuff. So I just did stuff. I'm interviewing you as I would a patient, asking questions and like stuff like that. But
oh, I love it.
But I love my music. I love it.
Look, go ahead. I'm going to tell you something, man. You, you're very detailed. And I noticed that you, because when you popped up here, I was like, oh, that's who's following me. I recognize your picture. I was like, this is who it is right here. So I'm very excited. I wanted to know who you were, man, and your spirit, the spirit that you have. That is so laid back, and you just, I could tell you're a doctor, something going on. You're asking the right stuff, and it's, I'm just being me. If I seem a little hype, it's because that's my way of expressing, like getting over my shyness. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are times when I'm real laid back, like, and then cats want to know, well, what's wrong with Nitty today? You know what I'm saying? But like, it's I'm only being myself. I'm not a fake. You know what I mean? I'm just having this conversation with you, man, and this is the way I am when I'm not on camera. I wasn't able to do this before, bro. I'm just having a conversation, being who I am when I'm around people that I know, and we're having a conversation.
Yeah.
It's silly, man. Just
having a conversation. Well, as I said, as a therapist, what your mom did back in high school, that's back when you were in church, that's the kind of stuff where I always say, if you've already hit the platform one, if you've already been able to overcome it once, it's always going to be there. So you can always revert back to that. Says, you know what, if you have to do something that you haven't done before, you're like, you know what, I did it once, I can always do it again. You know, one of the questions I always try and end up with is, if you were stuck in an elevator and you had a choice of watching a movie while they're fixing to get you out, what would you ask to watch?
Lean on Me. It's true, man. If I'm stuck in an elevator, I would like to watch Lean on Me, man.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite movies today. That and Prince, that Purple Rain.
I
want to see, I kind of want to see Apollonia jump into Lake Minnetonka. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay. I want to see her jump in there. Okay. I'll be honest, I'm probably one of the only people who's never watched Purple Rain. I'm a big Michael Jackson fan, so Prince was... Yeah, I was a big Michael fan, so I Prince was the enemy back in those days and stuff.
But, you shocked me! If you're a Michael Jackson fan, you gotta be a Prince fan, because they tried to make them rivals, but they were really friends, man. They were friends. People didn't know that.
Yeah, but as a fan of Michael, you're like, Prince is the enemy, so you just don't like it at any of his stuff. What about song, though?
But it was good for their record sales. Like,
yeah, definitely.
That way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They act that way, but they were buddies, man.
Yeah, I've seen pictures and stuff. Or if you have a song, though, if you had a song that you had to, like, okay, favorite song that you had to play while again the movie ready, what would you pick?
A favorite song if I was stuck on the elevator, the same thing I wanted to listen to? Wow, okay, favorite song would be, there's so many songs going through my head right now, man. if I had to pick one that I wanted to listen to, it's this song by Aaron Neville, and I want to say... I don't know much, but I know I love you.
Okay.
That That song right there, man. I heard that today. I had to pull over because I was crying. I'm like,
okay.
You made me cry, man.
Okay.
And I'm so tired. Like, when I'm tired, I get like emotional. That song, I had to pull over driving home today.
Wow.
Today, played the song. And I was wiping my eyes, man, crying, man. Like, damn, that song is so beautiful, man.
Yeah.
So beautiful. So that would be the record.
That would be the record. Well, I know I know that my stuff is giving me like probably counting down 30 seconds and 20 seconds and stuff. But I appreciate the time, appreciate the opportunity. It's been great listening to you. It's been great going through the stories and everything like that, and I'm really hearing sort of backstories to the backstory and stuff.
Thanks for watching. Please remember to subscribe to the channel, but most importantly, to press the notification bell so that you can be notified when we do have a new interview, loads to come. But thanks a lot for watching.